Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, a local association is engaging the community on rural transportation on Cortez Island. The Cortez Community Economic Development Association has been working on their Cortez Quadra Community Passenger Transport Solution Project and will be consulting communities this summer. Louis Belcourt reports from CKTZ on Cortez Island. And if you visit Mount Revelstoke National Park this summer, you might see some queer critters. Melissa Jameson at Stoke FM in Revelstoke will bring you more on that story. In Smithers, a new program to help people access local healthy vegetables is helping provide good food alternatives for people in Smithers and connecting them to local growers. Pam Hassan at CICK News in Smithers reports. And the Kitwanga Elementary School was awarded a $10,000 reading grant for their library and literacy programs. The Coast Mountains School District announced on Facebook that Kitwanga was a recipient of the Indigo Love of Reading Foundation grant. Sabrina Spencer at CFNR in Terrace has that story. Stay with us.
In Dawilawan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. Kitwanga Elementary School has secured a $10,000 grant from the Indigo Love of Reading Foundation to help revitalize their library and literacy initiatives. With focus on student input, they plan to address diverse interests by expanding their book inventory to include popular themes like Minecraft and SpongeBob. The grant will not only enhance literacy engagement and achievement, but also foster community involvement through a series of planned events, ranging from educational sessions to family-oriented literacy activities. CFNR spoke with Vice Principal Cassia Namath about the grant.
My name is Cassia Namath, and I'm the Vice Principal at Kitwanga Elementary, also the teacher librarian and the literacy support teacher.
Kitwanga Elementary School had received funding from the Indigo Love of Reading Foundation.
Yes, we got to announce that last week. It was very exciting.
When did you apply for this funding?
So I applied for this grant majority over Christmas break, so way back in December, a little bit into January as well when we got back, as I wanted some student input on what they thought about our library right now and what they wish our library had.
How much was the funding that you have received?
We received a $10,000 grant.
How will the $10,000 grant specifically be utilized to enhance the school's library?
We kind of have four different key objectives that we were aiming for when we did apply. And now that we did receive the grant, we're hoping to keep moving forward with those four objectives. So the first one is to improve school literacy and inventory. So this will be purchasing new books for our library that better represent our students and their interests. With that, we also want to increase literacy engagement in class, in the library, at home, all of those good things. Increase literacy achievement. So we're hoping to kind of up our reading and writing scores. We're typically below the district average, so we're hoping we can make a little bump now that we have this grant. And we also want to enhance community engagement. So those are going to be our four key areas.
And you mentioned that you were asking students on what they were wanting. What were some of the things that the students were looking for? What made you apply for the foundation grant?
Students were looking for things like they wanted more Minecraft books, SpongeBob books, Lego books. So that kind of showed me that they have interests that they want to read about or that they want to learn more about, and we just don't have the books for it. We have one Minecraft book, and it's checked out every single time. So obviously there's more students than high-interest books. So there was that. And actually another principal in the district is the one that shared this grant with me. They kind of sent it out to all the principals, and they were like, hey, the application window's open. So I clicked on it, and I just thought that our school would be a really good fit for the grant.
What impact do you hope these changes will have on students' reading experiences and academic achievements?
One of the biggest things that we want to change is that way back in December when I was chatting with students, one of the questions I asked them was if they saw themselves reflected in our library. And only 20% of students said yes, they did. And that was students all the way from kindergarten up to grade 7. So we want that number to be 100%. We want them to have books that they see themselves in, that they want to read, that represent their life. And that'll all help with our big goals, like increasing engagement. Once they're engaged and get that love of reading, then we think the academic achievement will follow.
The school mentioned hosting community literacy events in the upcoming year. What types of events are you hoping to host?
We kind of want to have a wide range of events, and we have a few ideas. So we actually had one this year that we hosted in collaboration with the Hazleton Public Library, where families could come and take out books to read, play some games, some literacy games, and have some snacks. That was a fun start, but we hope to kind of do more and offer more and have some better engagement and outreach there. And we want to have some that are like educational events where we can kind of help anyone that has questions with home reading or explaining some of our home reading programs and how they can support their kids at home. But then we also would like to have some fun events where families can just come together and play literacy games or have a space and time to be able to read together.
What message would you like to convey to the community and parents about the importance of literacy and impact of this grant on Kitwanga Elementary School?
For the importance of literacy, I would say literacy gives our kids access to the world around them. Things like reading street signs, having conversations, reading things at the grocery store, reading food labels, being able to tell stories, read books, go on social media. So we hope that this grant will expand our literacy resources and teaching opportunities, help build a love for reading in our students so they experience literacy success, and therefore they'll be better able to interact and experience the world around them.
Is there anything else you'd like to share or add at all today?
I guess I would just add that if any like community members or anyone in BC has some ideas or thoughts that they would like to share with us, we'd be more than happy to hear out some voices on that.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
Today on CICK News, I am speaking to Christine Bruce, the Food Security Coordinator at the Smithers Community Services Association, about a new program called Everybody Eats. The aim of this program is to create healthier options for those who use food programs to feed themselves and their families. Christine has built a system with three prongs to connect eaters with local growers, which she will explain in our interview as we sat down during last week's farmers market. Everybody Eats will launch publicly at the Bulkley Valley Farmers Market on Saturday, June 15th, and Christine is buzzing with excitement to introduce everybody to this new approach to food security.
So we're here to talk about Everybody Eats. This is a program you've told me a little bit about, but I would love to learn a lot more. So tell me, first off, what is Everybody Eats?
The quick definition of this brand new initiative is a response to the outdated thinking of how charity works. I feel like we're always battling things like bureaucracy and old ways of thinking like nepotism and racism, and Everybody Eats is my attempt to break through some of that and to see that everybody gets access to local fresh food. I want people to have agency over their food choices. I want to connect people with food on a deeper level, like where did it come from and how do you prepare it and how do you process it for later use. And then there are the larger considerations like what relationships can we build around food. In a nutshell, Everybody Eats is my attempt through the Smithers Community Services Association to connect more people with local fresh food.
How did Everybody Eats, how did all of this begin?
So it all started, if you can believe it, with a box of Captain Crunch cereal. Those processed foods are full of either sugar or salt, and they're not a healthy breakfast option, but I was given a box in a Christmas food hamper through the SCSA a couple of years ago, and when I mentioned to friends and colleagues that this wasn't a good option for feeding people, they made me feel ungrateful. I recognize that these programs are run by well-intended, kind people. But like I said before, the model is outdated. The charitable philosophy of feeding people shouldn't be it's better than nothing. There's no power involved when you give people agency over their food choices. And I want to give people, like eaters, their power back when you offer them the option of local and fresh. In the winter, a series of meetings between me and the new executive director of the community services, Myung Lee, resulted in their inviting me to launch a new position, the food security coordinator, which we've never had here before. Mm-hmm. And I've been hired to manage and make improvements to three programs. Extend the Christmas hamper program with a long-term goal of offering hampers all year and to move away from the processed food that has been the staple of that program. Now, I understand some people love the processed food part, but processed foods have been studied and proven to be unhealthy in anyone's diet. So we'll still offer it, but with a supplement of local and fresh. So people will have options now. And then the next program is managing the BCAFM, the Association of Farmers Markets, their coupons program, and ensure that everybody can eat. Because as it operates right now, it's really restrictive, so only pregnant people or families with small children or seniors can get access to this. And the working poor are left out of that.
Yep.
And then I want to ensure that seniors in the Better at Home program get access to more fresh and local food through a hot meals program. So those are the three programs that they really want me to work on. So we need to step back a little bit for a minute. Our current systems are set up in a siloed structure, always competing. We have this long history of people being pitted against each other. And in the movie 500 Days in the Wild, Diane Whelan commented, "We used to live in a society, but now we live in an economy." And that really resonated with me. It encapsulates the big hole that I see in a lot of these programs. We're not feeding everyone, and it's set up under an outdated charity model. And the system is based on colonial and capitalist models, and it's deeply divided. And I can see why my three programs have been set up the way they have and why they have restrictions on who can eat and what they can have. And the people who managed them before me were doing their best. And the other thing is we have to remember is people don't like change. It might be a broken system, but it's comfortable, mm-hmm. right? So our new SCSA mission statement insists on making change, to be more inclusive, more equitable, to give people agency over their food choices. And I've been tasked with building partnerships and to collaborate. So my first goal, as I said before, is to change attitudes, particularly around charity. Charity began as a band-aid solution to a growing problem of people in need, and that band-aid solution has become a big money industry. And yet the people who need help are becoming destitute, and there's more of them. They're becoming less healthy. And the only people who really benefit from us giving a box of processed cereal to the needy are big industry, not the people we're giving it to. Mm-hmm. So it's not working, and it was never meant as a permanent solution. And one last thing I would like to say is that right now has been described as a time of unraveling, which is scary, but it also opens up opportunities. And that's where programs like Everybody Eats come in.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.
June is the start of Pride season, a time when people who are part of the two-spirit, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or questioning community come together, along with allies, to recognize the contributions and resilience of the 2SLGBTQ+ community. Here in Revelstoke, Pride season got its start a little early as the team at Mount Revelstoke National Park treated the community to a Pride celebration at Snow Forest Campground in May. As part of its family-friendly activities, attendees were treated to queer ecology walks. According to the Sierra Club, quote, "Queer ecology uses a practice called queering, which means in part to make something different or strange, to question the assumptions underlying concepts such as, quote, wild or natural, end quote." Stoke FM spoke with Mount Revelstoke and Glacier National Parks Public Outreach Education Officer Laura Bernier shortly after the park's Pride celebration. We asked her what queer critters people might be able to spot while walking the trails in Mount Revelstoke National Park this summer. Here's what she had to say.
So any slug or snail that you'll see in the park is likely a hermaphrodite. Now, just to clarify, this word is used in humans debatably incorrectly in a lot of instances, but from an ecological point of view, it means an individual that is biologically fully female and fully male at the same time. So slugs in the park, for example, most of them will have both sperm and eggs. They'll mate, and both slugs can produce young, but sometimes they also have the ability to produce young asexually, so without mating. So that's one example that you might see a lot, especially late summer and into the fall. They come out and they're around the trails. And another example that visitors might see or hear in the national park is red squirrels. So females are found to form bonds with other females. They are affectionate with one another, and they are also found to parent together. And their bonds are primarily homosexual, but opposite sex mating will happen during the mating season. So we can call them seasonally bisexual in that case.
For 92.5 Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Melissa Jamison.
This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Louis Belcour.
The Cortez Community Economic Development Association, or CEDA for short, has been working on their recent Cortez and Quadra Community Passenger Transportation Solutions project and hosting community meetings like the one this past Thursday on June 6th to gauge what the community wants in terms of public transit. Kate Madigan, the Economic Development Officer for CEDA, says the meetings have been relatively well attended and Cortez residents are calling for a bus route. I spoke with Madigan for more on the project.
Hi, I'm Kate Madigan. I'm project managing the Cortez Quadra Passenger Transportation Solutions project, and I also am the Economic Development Officer for CEDA, which is the short way of saying the Cortez Community Economic Development Association. So CEDA has been doing quite a few things. This transportation project is the latest thing. We received funding from the Island Coastal Economic Trust, along with several other communities on Vancouver Island, all designed to figure out rural passenger transportation solutions. This has been a great project. It's not just me. I'm working with several other people. We have a project team made up of Jen Bankstahl, who's a resident and consultant on Quadra Island. She's amazing. Sadhu Johnston, who most people would know as a resident of Cortez and also working on housing issues. And the other project member is Lisa Ferrantinos. She's a CEDA board member. And Steve Earl, who is a passenger. He lives and works on Gabriola Island and was really integral to the success of the Gertie bus on Gabriola Island. So that's our project team so far.
So tell me about this Cortez and Quadra Community Passenger Transportation Solutions project and what your goals are there.
Yes, I think everybody knows that passenger transportation is pretty darn limited, as it is in a lot of rural areas. This has been flagged as an issue all over the province, all over the country. And I think governments are starting to get serious about that. There's so many things that passenger transportation touches on, including poverty. A lot of people can't afford to have their own vehicle. It touches on climate and just having fewer cars on the road and burning up fossil fuels and contributing to climate change. The more we can get people to share rides and use fewer vehicles, it's just better for it. It also contributes to relieving the pressure on the ferries. That's a huge thing for us. The ability to offer non-car, non-personal vehicle transportation to people who visit the island, which also helps relieve ferry pressure. And it helps people who come here without a car, and we're talking about the yachters and people arriving by boat, other people arriving by boat. It helps them get to the various places on our island to spend more of their tourist dollars supporting our local businesses. That's a huge thing. And that is something that was flagged in our tourism consultation we did earlier. CEDA did a tourism plan earlier this year, and that was a huge thing that was flagged. How do we support our local businesses and get more dollars per tourist going to our local business people? So transportation is a big part of that.
What are some examples of passenger transport solutions?
So I think the obvious one is a bus, right? On Gabriola, they've got Gertie, and it's not a full-fledged huge city bus. It's smaller than that. I think it's something like 15 passenger bus or something like that. There's also vans that will transport up to 12 or 14 passengers. The Island Link is one of those kind of buses. So there's a bus on a scheduled route, just like you would find in the city, only a smaller version of that. And that's just one. Another one is ride hailing service. And I should mention that we had a few weeks ago a learning forum where we invited organizers of several different options. And so it was an online forum to talk about what they've launched in their communities to help meet passenger transportation demands. And we got the Gertie bus, Stephen Earle, come in. He did a presentation on that, and everybody could ask questions of him on how that works. We also got Coastal Rides, which is a ride hailing service, Uber or Lyft, only it's on Vancouver Island. And we got the guy that started that app-based service to come and talk to us at our learning forum as well. And that was really interesting. We also got the gal who started up the Zunga bus over in Powell River, which is like a bus on a scheduled route, but it's a hybrid sort of ride hailing as well. So the bus will actually go to where you live and pick you up and take you where you need to go. But it's also somewhat scheduled as well. So you can book it, but it has to be within a certain schedule or on a certain route. That was just another option that we learned about at the Learning Forum. And there's also, what about taxi service? There's a project happening on Pender Island where they're trying to get the taxi service to be more sustainable. And so that's another thing we could look at.
Tell me a little bit about the community meetings that CETA's been hosting, trying to get feedback from the community.
Yeah, so we had a couple of in-person meetings, one on Quadra and one on Cortez, and they weren't super well attended. We had it on a Saturday and the garden studio tour was happening. It doesn't seem like there's any good time to have a community meeting this time of the year, but alas, this is when we got the funding and this is when we had to do it. We had a better turnout for the Cortez meeting at Manson's Hall, and that was great. We had a presentation by the Steve Earle, the Gabriola Gertie guy, and lots of stimulating discussion around that. We had folks tell us what they would like to see, what would work for them. We had maps out asking people to show us what their route would be if they wanted a passenger transportation service, where they live, where they're trying to get to, and also what the reasons of their travel, like why they need that transportation option. Are they going to medical appointments? Are they going to school? Are they going to work? All those kind of details. Yeah, it was good. And then we also had a virtual meeting, which was not super well attended, but we got enough. And we also got a really good response to the survey, which was, we got about almost 300 responses. And there was something like 134 from Quadra. People filled it out, 92 from Cortez and 22 from the Outer Islands. And per capita, it's actually the Outer Islands was the most strongly represented. There was 14 people out of 100. So that was pretty good. But Cortez was pretty well represented, and we got a lot of good information from that survey.
What feedback have you received from people on Cortez and from these community meetings? And what sort of passenger transport solutions do people really seem to be asking for?
It does seem that people mostly want a bus. They seem to feel that would be the best solution to meet passenger transportation. I just have to say, I think that's just the one that people are most familiar with. We would have liked it if everybody could have attended the learning forum where all of these different options, and there's a lot of new options that people are not familiar with, like the ride hailing and the hybrid bus ride hailing service. Had people been more familiar with those other options, they might have just said this other thing may have made a lot more sense. But it does seem that people are gravitating a lot to a community bus service. It just does seem that people would like to see a passenger, like a bus, a community bus on Quadra. That does seem to be where this is going.
So that bus would be running across Quadra to Cortez, but would there also be a, is there a possibility for a bus on Cortez as well?
I think if we did that, right now, islands with populations similar to us, they're only operating a bus in the summer months. Denman has one from May, actually, until the end of September. And then Hornby has it just for the summer months. So we could learn a lot from those folks, what they're doing. And so if it was on Cortez, again, the ridership would be a lot stronger and would help meet the operations budget with people paying for the service in the summer months. And there wouldn't be that ridership in the winter months. But that's just a bus, right? Again, we could potentially have a ride share service where we're actively trying to match people who have empty seats in their car and they're going to the ferry or they're going somewhere. Like, how can we make a ride share situation that much better?
How does CETA plan to implement one of these chosen solutions eventually?
Yeah, good question. I mentioned earlier that the government is really wanting to help advance better passenger transportation solutions in rural areas in the province. We are being told that there are going to be some announcements of funding to help meet those needs. That's why we're doing this project. We're trying to get to the point of implementation, right? Figure out what exactly it is that the communities want and will use. And then when that funding announcement comes through, we can use it to implement whatever it is that the community says it wants.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Louis, for your interest.
Louis Bocor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.